What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Chasing Clarity Health and Fitness Podcast. This is your host, Brandon DeCruz, and today is episode 106, where we're going to discuss the best ways to kill cravings and reduce food triggers. We're also going to cover how to tell the difference between hunger and cravings and how to crush cravings to improve your body composition. So, cravings are something we've all experienced, and is a topic I often discuss with clients, many of whom will experience cravings. And this could happen for a variety of reasons and in a multitude of situations. So they could experience cravings when we first clean up their diet. They can experience cravings when they're in a food environment, especially one that's filled with, say, hyperpalatable tasty foods. It could be when they're going through menstruation or when they're pregnant, or after they've slipped up off their diet and they've consumed foods that trigger their cravings. So last week I covered what a craving is, what nutritional, environmental, and lifestyle factors cause us to crave certain foods, and I busted some common myths around the etiology of cravings. So if you have yet to listen to episode 105 of the podcast, I encourage you to go back and check it out as that episode lays the foundation to what we're going to discuss today. So cravings are a form of hedonic hunger, meaning that when you indulge in a craving, it's due to factors outside of a true physiological need for calories. As you don't experience cravings due to needing calories or specific nutrients or due to hormonal changes across the cycle, as many people are led to believe, but rather you mainly experience cravings due to the types of foods you expose yourself to, especially those that are highly processed and hyperpalatable. The issue that many encounter is that they struggle to manage their food cravings and often give in to having them, but giving into cravings isn't an effective strategy, as they often cause you to crave these items even more in the future and can also drive you to overeat, which can derail your body composition and your health progress and ultimately can hinder the results you achieve. However, before you can manage your cravings, you first need to be able to tell the difference between true hunger and cravings, as many individuals don't have a good ability to tell the difference between the two, which often results in them indulging in the foods they crave and eating even in the absence of hunger. So both hunger and cravings are an increased drive to eat, which are a part of our appetite system. But in order to tell the difference between true hunger and cravings, you need to separate the two out in terms of what each feeling is, what causes each feeling, and how we can manage them. So let's start with true hunger first and foremost. So true hunger is an increased drive to eat that comes as a result of needing calories. So we need food to provide us with energy that we can then utilize for energy. So true hunger is non-specific. So you can satisfy true hunger by eating any type of food. However, hunger is suppressed and reduced most by nutrient-dense whole foods. So these are going to be eating foods like your lean protein sources, fiber-containing fruit and veg, complex carbohydrates, and healthy fats. Hunger usually comes about after an extended period of time without eating and will usually occur around the same times each day if you follow a regular eating schedule in terms of your meal times, as the initiation of hunger is heavily influenced by the hunger hormone ghrelin, which is actually entrained by the times we consistently eat at. So that's why you'll notice that hunger is quite predictable, especially if you keep a consistent schedule. So you'll usually experience true hunger around the same times each day. And also if you go a very long period of time without eating, such as if one morning you're very busy and you skip breakfast or you extend your morning fast, you'll notice that you're hungrier than normal because generally during that time period, you would have already taken in nutrients. So the fact that you've extended that fast and went an elongated period of time without eating, you're going to experience increases in hunger. Also, if you're truly experiencing physiological hunger, you'll notice that your stomach will feel empty and you can often hear your stomach growling. So there'll be some actual physical signs and manifestations of that true physiological hunger. Now, on the other hand, we have cravings. So a craving is an increased desire for a specific food or type of food that is not due to a true physiological need for energy or calories. Now, this doesn't mean that you don't have a desire for that food. You have an increased drive to eat. However, it's not due to an actual necessity. And this is why you can experience cravings even an hour or two after eating a meal. So despite the fact that you've just consumed more than enough energy, cravings can be triggered in the complete absence of hunger, which is what we see in trials looking at the effects of emotional states such as stress, boredom, and anxiety, where many individuals will crave a specific food that they associate with comfort and will want to eat as a form of self-medication, not for actual substance. So not for the actual need for energy, but rather to utilize it as a coping mechanism. So cravings can come about at any time, but usually when we're experiencing emotions like stress, boredom, anxiety, or even like mental fatigue, or they'll come about when we've been exposed to tasty foods. Now, cravings will go away over time, so it is something that you can wait out, because keep in mind, this isn't a true physiological need for energy. So it's not like going without the cravings is going to do any physiological harm. It's not like, you know, bypassing on the donuts is going to put you back in terms of your actual caloric needs and things of that sort. So in order to reduce and manage our cravings, we first need to differentiate whether the feeling you're experiencing is physiological hunger or psychological hunger, which is leading to a craving. And this is important to distinguish, as true hunger can often cause cravings to be exacerbated, because when you're actually experiencing true hunger, and you're actually in the need for energy, you not only have a need for energy, but now you want energy dense foods on top of it. So it's like kind of like adding insult to injury. And so if you're experiencing physiological hunger, which is a need for food from an energetic perspective, we need to deal with that first, as managing hunger will often suppress your cravings and will also help you to manage your intake more effectively by eating more satiating whole food sources that have a lower calorie density and provide more satiety per calorie. So this is what we want to focus on first and foremost before we just go to grabbing something that we're craving and then, you know, being led to overeating, because we not only have the desire for a specific food, but we also have true physiological hunger that's underlying. So many individuals eat for hedonic reasons, such as for pleasure or stress relief, more often than they do as a result of actual hunger. Because true hunger is non-specific, whereas cravings are specific. So with true hunger, you can reduce the feeling of being hungry through any food, including low calorie density foods like lean proteins, vegetables, and fruit, which are not only great for hunger management, but also for improving your body composition and your health. Whereas if you're actually experiencing a craving, low calorie density foods are not going to appease that craving, you know, specifically, as cravings are for a very specific food, and the vast majority of cravings we experience are for hyperpalatable, calorie-dense food sources. So if you're someone who struggles with being able to tell if you're truly hungry or not, I encourage you to take what I refer to as the hunger versus cravings test. And we're going to utilize this to determine if what you're experiencing is true physiological hunger or just a craving. So I want you to ask yourself, are you hungry enough to eat a bowl of vegetables like carrots or cucumbers? Or is the only thing you're hungry for chocolate or cookies? If you find yourself not interested in the bowl of veggies, although you do know that that would, like eating that would satiate your hunger, what you're experiencing is a craving. I personally ask myself a similar question when I'm having difficulty telling if I'm truly hungry or not, because oftentimes it could be very difficult to tell. And so for me, I'll do what I refer to as the grilled chicken salad test. So if I'm having trouble determining whether I'm hungry, I'll ask myself, would a grilled chicken salad satiate me right now? And this is going to be, you know, if we think about the context or the composition of a grilled chicken salad, this is a high protein, high volume meal with plenty of veggies and fiber. So I know that when I'm truly hungry, a big ass salad with grilled chicken is going to suppress my hunger. However, if I notice that I'm not inclined to eat that meal, then what I'm experiencing is a craving. So I have to really be very objective with myself. And this is one way that I'm able to spot test myself, essentially. So before you just eat what you're craving without thinking twice, take a minute and ask yourself the following questions. Is this true hunger or is this a craving? Or is this true hunger that's being shaped into a craving by what I have in my surrounding environment? I also want you to ask yourself, how hungry am I? If you're really hungry, ask yourself if veering off plan and eating for taste is really going to alleviate that hunger without blowing your calorie budget in the process. Ask yourself if the current dietary decision you're considering, is it worth it? Is it in line with my macros and my goals? Will it nourish me, or will I eat this tasty treat right now and be left wanting more despite taking in a ton of calories? And when you're having trouble differentiating between hunger and cravings, ask yourself, would you eat a chicken breast and a big ass salad right now? If you wouldn't eat this right now because you don't feel like it, it's a craving you're experiencing. So the first step to reducing cravings is to stop eating out of habit and making impulsive decisions around food, and to work on becoming more in tune with your hunger cues, because many eat out of habit more than they do out of actual true hunger. The next topic I want to cover is why you shouldn't rely on willpower to deal with cravings and adhere to your diet. There are a lot of individuals who try to rely on willpower during a diet. And many people believe that in order to lose body weight and body fat, they simply need more willpower. So they try to exercise willpower and self-control to make better decisions around their eating habits and behaviors. For those of you out there who can relate to believing that you just need more willpower to succeed with your body composition related goals, I'd like to ask you, how well is relying on willpower working for you right now? And how well has it worked for you in the past? Has willpower allowed you to consistently make nutrition decisions that are in alignment with your goal? Has relying on willpower helped you to avoid giving in and eating food items you crave even when these foods are within your environment and in your close proximity? And has relying on willpower allowed you to lose weight and keep it off long term? I'd like you to all ask yourselves these questions because, in my experience, relying on willpower is often an approach that breaks down for many. And it's sort of like motivation, where it may help you in the moment, but it's not an effective strategy to rely on long term, as both motivation and willpower can be here one moment, yet be gone the next. Another interesting fact is that research finds that those with the most amount of willpower actually use it the least. And this is where I'd encourage you to stop relying on willpower to help you stick to your diet and make food decisions that will help you improve your physique, and instead design your lifestyle to put you into the best position to succeed. All right, so now I want to get into the meat of the podcast, and I'm going to cover the most effective strategies to kill cravings. Now, in order to defeat your cravings, you need to use strategies that address the four main factors that cause and drive food cravings the most, which are the first factor would be eating and exposing yourself to hyperpalatable foods, specifically foods that combine highly concentrated doses of refined sugars, starches, and fats. B, you need to keep yourself satiated so that unmanaged hunger doesn't exacerbate your cravings. C, you need to address food cues that trigger the creation of cravings. And you need to be aware of how your emotional state impacts the development of cravings. So strategy number one, stop reinforcing the reward pathway by continuing to consume the foods that trigger strong cravings. The best way to stop a craving is to starve it. And this is how they refer to it in the literature. But essentially what that means is to stay away from eating the items you crave most and the foods that trigger you to overeat. As the longer you go without them, the less you'll experience the drive to eat those foods. Especially because as we stop eating these foods, your brain will eventually forget the high amount of dopamine release it got from those items. And the reinforcement and food reward you got from eating those foods will diminish over time. And research finds that the most effective way to extinguish a craving is to significantly reduce the frequency in which you eat the food items you crave. This is because experiencing strong cravings for a food is more significantly influenced by how often you give into eating that craved food than by how much of that food you consume in a single sitting. And this is because every time you eat a food you crave, it reinforces the memory and experience of that craved food in your brain and strengthens the association your brain has with that food providing lots of dopamine, lots of pleasure, and a lot of food reward, which makes you more likely to experience cravings for that same food again in the future. So the more often you eat that craved food and receive that dopamine boost from it, the more it gets stamped into your memory, which makes you want to go back for more and makes moderating your consumption of that food even more difficult, both in the moment, but also in the future. And this is something that's been tested many times in the literature. So for example, in a 2017 study, researchers conducted a two-year trial to see how the frequency of consumed foods impacted the changes in cravings for those foods. So this study found that altering the frequency of consuming craved foods was positively associated with cravings, but changing the amount of these foods consumed in a single meal did not appear to alter cravings significantly. Meaning those who substantially reduced their frequency of eating the foods they craved saw the most substantial reductions in their cravings for those foods, whereas those who increased their frequency of eating the foods they craved actually experienced increases in the frequency in which they craved those same foods. And this study also found that simply reducing the portions of craved foods within a sitting didn't reduce food cravings long term. So if you want to reduce your likelihood of experiencing a craving for a specific food that you're struggling with, the most effective way to do so is to reduce how often and how frequently you eat that food and you expose yourself to it. Research also finds that if you struggle with cravings for a specific food or a specific food group, that limiting that food can extinguish a craving. So for example, in a 2011 study, researchers investigated the effect of prescribing either a low carbohydrate diet or a low fat diet on food cravings, food preferences, and appetite. And they found that regardless of whether a participant was put on a low carb or a low fat diet, they experienced a reduction in cravings. But they found that the prescriptions of diets that promoted the restriction of specific types of foods, so in this case, that would be the restriction of either carbs or fat containing foods, resulted in decreased cravings and preferences for the foods that were targeted for restriction. Meaning, if you were in the low-carb group, you experienced a decrease in cravings for carbohydrates and a decreased preference for high-carb foods. Whereas if you were in the low-fat group, you experienced a decrease in cravings for fats and a decreased preference for high-fat foods. So this means that if you want to significantly reduce how often you experience cravings in general, or even just for a specific food type like chocolate or cookies or anything that you as an individual struggle with, the way to do so is to reduce how often you expose yourself to these foods and how often you consume these foods. And this whole reduction of eating and decreasing the frequency of crave food is a strategy I've personally utilized in my own life to improve my dietary habits. And it's something I've seen work with a ton of clients over the years. So I first got interested in the topic of food cravings around 2015 after a contest prep, where I'd worked with a coach who prescribed weekly cheat days, which he referred to at that time as spike days. And this is back when a lot of coaches still promoted the idea that you could spike your metabolism with high calorie cheat days. So this was an approach many were using at that time. But now we know that this isn't the case, as research finds that a single day of overfeeding by even up to 50% over your maintenance calories only produces about a 7 to 8% increase in your total daily energy expenditure. Meaning that even when you do a massive overfeeding in one single day, you're still in about a 42 to 43% surplus for that day. And this type of approach can often lead you to slow down your rate of fat loss or even stall it if these cheat days are really calorie dense. So in 2015, every weekend, I'd have one day, which would be my cheat day. And I would always end that day with a pizza from Papa John's, which is something I associated with my college experiences. As every Sunday when I was in college, my roommates and I would go and grab a pizza from Papa John's and have a Sunday dinner together. Now, in order to be able to fit those cheat days in, my coach had me diet really hard for 6 days of the week. So I was eating very, very low calories, very low carbohydrates. And then on the seventh day, so on Sundays, it essentially became a free-for-all. And as each week passed, I noticed that I craved pizza more and more. And so this resulted in me having a pizza every weekend, even once that prep was over. And my food intake was back to normal and my hunger was back to normal because it had become such a habitual part of my week. It was something I looked forward to. It was something I craved. It was something I felt like really pushed and driven towards. And so during this off season, I got up to a really heavy body weight, especially in comparison to previous years prior to that. And I realized I was not only doing myself a disservice taking this approach, but I was also struggling with excessive pizza cravings despite eating more than enough food and having more than enough body fat. So it wasn't like I was still dieted down like in this prep where I was under eating and I was at a very low essential level of body fat. Even when I was back up to off season, and at that time I got like 30, 35 pounds above my stage weight during that off season. So I was sufficiently well fed to say the least, but I was still being very driven towards these hyperpalatable foods and specifically pizza, which I had a very positive association with. And it was something that I really felt compelled to eat on a weekly basis. But at that time, I had to be objective with myself and realize this was doing me more harm than good, both mentally and physically. So prior to New Year's in 2016, I was discussing with a friend of mine changes I wanted to make heading into the new year. And I told him I wanted to give up my weekly pizza night because it was causing excessive food focus and was hindering my body composition progress. I was gaining weight at a rapid rate. It was really hard for me to control my surplus. And it just wasn't leading, you know, from a digestive perspective, from a body composition perspective, just wasn't leading to positive outcomes. And so he knew me really well. This is a close friend of mine, and knew if he made a bet with me that I wouldn't turn it down. So what he did was he bet that I couldn't go all of 2016 without eating pizza. So on December 31st of 2015, I had my final pizza for what I thought would be the next year. Now, the first few weeks going without pizza were honestly brutal, as I had come to associate every single Sunday with heading to Papa John's and grabbing a meat lover's pizza. So during the first month, I started looking into the research on cravings and found evidence that at that time had found that we can reduce our cravings over time by limiting our consumption of that crave food, which honestly at that time just gave me hope that if I held out for long enough, the cravings would subside. So the first two or so months were really challenging for me, but I kind of looked at it as a temporary sacrifice for a long-term improvement in my relationship with food and my eating behaviors. And over time, my cravings for pizza became weaker and weaker. And by that end of the year, I can be honest with you, I didn't even think about them. And, you know, this is going to sound extreme, but I'm just going to be objective and honest with you guys. To this day, I've honestly never had pizza again. And at this point, it's been over 8 years, and I now can literally walk by a pizzeria and smell the aroma of pizza. I can watch a friend or a family member eat pizza in front of me, and I have no desire or drive to eat pizza, as I not only don't have a strong association with pizza any longer because I've went so long without it, but I also don't identify myself as a pizza lover or a pizza craver. And pizza is a food I couldn't moderate my consumption of. And I realized years ago that in life, for every gimme, there's a gotcha. And in most situations, there are only trade-offs. So I traded the pleasure I received from pizza for the improvements in my eating behaviors, my body composition, and my control over my food choices. And it's been a trade-off that I've personally found to be massively beneficial moving forward. All right, so on to strategy number two for killing your food cravings, which is to replace the foods you crave with lower calorie alternatives that are more aligned with your goals. So this is what I refer to as looking for craving swaps, which is a healthier alternative to the food you're craving. If you're someone who doesn't want to completely give up the types of foods you crave, but you do want to improve your eating behaviors and your body composition, we can use a craving swap to strike a balance between getting in a flavor we like while also making sure that this is a healthier alternative that is more aligned with your goals and your calorie budget. So, for example, if you're craving ice cream, you can opt for a healthier version or a lower calorie version, such as a Halo Top or an Enlightened ice cream, which is a low calorie version, which generally has around 300 calories or less per pint, rather than going full send on a tub of Ben and Jerry's, which has well over 1,000 calories per pint. Another, craving swap could be you could opt for a bowl of berries with fat-free whipped cream instead of a calorie-loaded dessert like a piece of blueberry pie. And for those cravings lovers out there, if you're craving chocolate, try swapping it out for a chocolate-flavored protein bar. And using protein bars to replace candy bars is a strategy I've used with many of my clients, especially the women I work with who crave chocolate around their menstrual cycle. When looking at a protein bar to fill your chocolate bar or candy bar fix, we want something that isn't just a candy bar that's disguised by a company as a protein bar, which is what many companies do nowadays by just throwing in, say, 5 to 10 grams of protein within their bars. So this is a strategy I use myself, but in order to make sure this swap works, I try to make sure that the protein bar I choose is not only going to be more aligned with my calorie budget, but it's also going to help satiate me more than a candy bar would. I personally like to look for like what I refer to as the protein to calorie ratio, meaning how many grams of protein am I getting for how many calories the bar contains. So generally, I want protein to account for at least 30 to 40% of the calorie content of a bar. A good example of this is the chocolate pure protein bars. So these bars have 21 grams of protein for 180 calories, meaning that 84 out of those 180 calories are coming from protein. So 47% of its energy content or its calorie content is protein, which is almost half of its content. Another one of my favorite options is the double chocolate Built Bar, which has 17 grams of protein for only 130 calories. So if we do 17 grams of protein times 4 calories per gram, that's 68 calories out of 130 calories total, which means that 52% of the calories in this protein bar are from protein. A few other alternatives I recommend you all try when working on defeating your cravings is eating carrot chips rather than real chips. Look at, swapping out and utilizing a non-fat Greek yogurt flavored by zero calorie water flavoring like Mio, Crystal Light, or even like chocolate LMNT. You guys can look into making protein-based Ninja Creami ice creams, which are very, very low calorie and highly satiating alternatives to ice cream or other frozen desserts. You can look into swapping out nut butters or things of that sort with PB2 powdered peanut butter instead of a full-fat peanut butter, which honestly, most people, when they're including peanut butter or nut butters into their plan, most people overeat them due to using tablespoons instead of weighing out a true serving, which is actually quite depressing once you do. Actually weigh out a true serving of peanut butter because it's so much less than you actually think. Then other options, which are great to increase satiety and then also kick off that sweet craving or just, a craving you might have for something that's much higher calorie, but to limit the calorie intake that you have within that sitting, is sugar-free Jell-O with non-fat whipped cream, sugar-free Jell-O pudding mix, spaghetti squash, zucchini noodles, or cauliflower rice. And these are all much lower calorie alternatives to some of the foods that people crave most. And this is a good strategy to utilize when trying to reduce your cravings. So now, although these strategies may not sound appealing right now, if you're someone who's frequently eating hyperpalatable, extremely tasty foods, rest assured that your liking of them will improve and increase over time. Because research finds that we can actually shift our taste preferences over time. So for example, in a 2016 study, they found that reducing dietary intake of simple sugars altered individuals' perception of sweet taste over time, where they enjoyed lower sugar products more the longer the time period went on. This is also what many individuals experience when they reduce added sugar in their diets from items like candies, cakes, and sweets, or sugar-sweetened beverages. And over time, they find fruit to taste sweeter and enjoy fresh fruits more. And they also tend to enjoy the taste of diet beverages as compared to sugar-sweetened versions. So this is where someone goes from full sugar Coke or full sugar, sugar-sweetened beverages, and they go to diet alternatives. And they notice that they're still getting that sweet craving kick, or they're still getting that taste preference that they have, but they're saving hundreds of calories in the process. And so simply going a period of time consuming less refined and added sugars can not only save you hundreds of calories a day, which will make losing fat easier, but it can also shift your taste preferences over time. Other research finds that switching to a healthy dietary pattern for the goal of fat loss can increase our liking for low-calorie foods as compared to high-calorie foods. And it can also alter our food reward that we get from high-calorie to low-calorie foods over time. So, for example, in a 2014 study, they took overweight and obese individuals and put them into either a control group or a weight loss intervention, which included shifting those in the weight loss intervention to a health-promoting and fat loss-producing dietary pattern for 6 months. Now, after 6 months, they used functional MRI imaging to measure changes in brain activation towards different images of foods. And when comparing the control group, who stayed on their normal diet for the entire 6 months, versus the intervention group, who had lost a significant amount of weight over those 6 months, they found that those who had been on the weight loss diet had an increased activation in their brain when looking at low-calorie food items, especially the similar foods to what they had been consuming over the 6 month diet study. And they also found reductions in their brain activity and brain activation for high-calorie food items. So this study demonstrated that we can experience a positive shift in the activation of our reward system towards healthy versus unhealthy food cues in a behavioral intervention that includes improving our daily diet. A 2012 study found that calorically restricted diets yielded significant reductions in cravings for fats, sweets, starches, whereas cravings for fruits and vegetables were increased. So the good news is that although you may be struggling with cravings for hyperpalatable, calorie-dense foods right now, just like you've learned to associate those foods with pleasure, which created that strong craving and urge you feel towards those foods, we can actually disassociate that condition. And you can undo that learned association by going a period of time without eating those foods. Also, the longer you eat healthy, lower energy density foods, the more you'll develop a taste for them, as you tend to like what you eat most, which works for both healthy and unhealthy foods. So if you want to eat more of the foods that are aligned with your goals and less of the foods that derail your goals, aim to make your diet up of foods that help keep you satiated and don't tempt you to overeat, and reduce the amount of exposure and consumption of the foods you cannot moderate. All right, on to strategy number three, which is to proactively reduce cravings by staying prepared and satiated. So although true physiological hunger is not the root cause of cravings, experiencing increased hunger cues can increase your likelihood of experiencing cravings stronger, and they can also exacerbate how strong those cravings and urges feel. And this is why properly managing your hunger is so important. When trying to reduce cravings, you should aim to manage your hunger by eating regularly throughout the day and keeping yourself well-fueled and well-nourished. A lot of times we experience both hunger and cravings simultaneously, and this can be prompted by a lot of situations, but often it involves not eating a satiating diet, which leads you to experience more hunger and then being triggered by food cues in your environment, which make you want to go for more tasty, calorie-dense foods. So what we want to do is we want to flip the script on how you eat when you're both physically hungry and mentally craving something. Most of the time where many go wrong is they immediately go for the items they're craving when their hunger is at its highest peak of intensity. However, this leads to a situation where you're far more likely to eat way more of these items than you intended to, and you rack up a ton of calories in the process. So instead, we want to opt for highly satiating foods that set us up for success in terms of managing our appetite and our total daily energy and macronutrient budgets. So what I suggest you do is to start out by having some low energy density food sources first that provide a lot of protein, fiber, water content, food volume, and micronutrients. So you not only get in an adequate intake of protein and fiber, but you also get a ton of micros in the process. I'd also suggest having a go-to hunger management meal, which is easy, convenient, and highly satiating. You should start this go-to hunger management meal out with the two P's, meaning a proper protein source and a plant source. And this could be as simple as having a lean protein source like chicken or turkey or non-fat Greek yogurt, and then having a fiber-rich plant source such as a big-ass salad, cucumbers, carrots, strawberries, blueberries, or raspberries. And then from there, you can add in highly satiating carb, you know, complex carb sources like potatoes, oats, or squash. As these types of nutrient-dense whole food-based meals will not only suppress your hunger and weaken your cravings, but will also make it easier to avoid giving in to the temptations of the tasty food you're fiending for. Another helpful strategy is to stay prepared and satiated when you're out of the house. So if you know that you're heading out somewhere that's going to be filled with foods that you can't control, and you'll be likely to overeat if you're hungry, make sure you're prepared and eat before you go there so that you're satiated when you arrive. So for example, I worked in a corporate office for many years, and almost every single morning when I would roll into the office, we have bagels and cream cheese or muffins or those deluxe boxes of Dunkin' Donuts in the break room, which is actually right upon entrance of the building. So you would smell that. And you know, a lot of times we would arrive early to work and most of my coworkers would congregate in that break room before, you know, getting into the actual office structure. And those are just foods that weren't in line with my physique goals, and they would have started my day off in an unproductive way, as I would have eaten something that didn't contain a high amount of protein and fiber. So had I done what my coworkers did, which was to indulge in those foods first thing upon getting into the office in the morning, I would have been looking for more and more of these types of foods a few hours later and hitting the vending machines like they did, because it never failed that we would get into the office between 7 and 8 in the morning. And even prior to lunch, which we generally had a lunch break between 12:30 and 1, they'd be hitting the vending machines. They'd be having to, you know, order an Uber Eats or some type of delivery to get a snack because they had eaten something that was not satiating whatsoever. And then they were fiending and craving for more. And instead, I ate breakfast at home every single morning so that I didn't feel the need to fill up with foods in the break room and didn't even care to pass them by because once I got to the office, I was satiated. So I had no desire to eat again. So this was a preventative strategy that just by me just being prepared, it allowed me to bypass all of these temptations that many other were succumbing to. On to strategy number 4, which is the focus on stress management. Our emotional state, especially our levels of acute and chronic stress, play a really influential role in the development of food cravings, as research finds that when we're experiencing an unpleasant emotion, we tend to experience more food cravings. And stress and experiencing negative emotions can trigger cravings, emotional eating, and overeating. Now, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So the best approach to reduce your likelihood of experiencing stress-induced cravings is to implement stress management techniques throughout the week, as stress is bound to happen. And it's something that unfortunately is inevitable for many of us in our lives. However, I work with many clients and many of them are just extremely busy individuals. So as much as I'd like them to be doing mindfulness practices on a daily basis, and I often encourage them to do so, I get that not all of them can and will do that. And so often we have to try to put in strategies to try to safeguard them, you know, when they don't have all these stress management techniques on a daily basis. So this is where I want you to try the following. If you've had a stressful day and notice you're experiencing strong cravings, try this before you reach for that cookie, that chocolate, or that pint of Häagen-Dazs. First, I want you to pause and use the HALT method. So I want you to ask yourself, are you truly hungry? So that's the H. Or are you experiencing an unpleasant emotion like anxiety or anger, loneliness, or tiredness? And after asking yourself these questions, commit just 10 to 15 minutes where you engage in a pattern interrupt between the stimulus and action, meaning the stimulus, which is the emotion you're feeling, which is prompting that craving, and the action, which is feeding that craving. And during this time, call a loved one, throw on a podcast, or even better yet, go for a walk while you wait it out. And going for a walk is a great way to get yourself out of an environment where you're exposed to food cues and to distract yourself before you sit down to eat. It also allows you to engage in an activity that's facilitative for your body composition, your health, and your fitness-related goals, rather than an activity that's debilitative towards your goals. So during your walk, think about if there are any predisposing factors that are causing you to experience these cravings. Are you feeling any uncomfortable emotions like stress, anxiety, overwhelm, or sadness? Are you in an environment where you're being exposed to food cues that are making these food cravings worse or really prompting you to want to eat these foods and impulsively act upon these feelings? And once you get back, you know, back home, back from your walk, be objective with yourself about whether you want to give in to these cravings or not. But do so only after truly thinking about whether this food decision is worth it or not. And if it's conducive to me, given your current goals, or if it would be counterproductive and it would actually be non-conducive to your goals. And often I find that when myself and my clients use this pattern interrupt strategy, it helps us to use our logical brain to make a decision that's more aligned with our goals we've set and the progress we're working towards. And the more you do this, the easier it becomes to make decisions that are conducive for making progress, because you make it so that you're not utilizing your impulse isn't what becomes a habit. So essentially, you utilize that pause strategy and that pattern interrupt, and that becomes your habit so that you're much more able to use your intellect rather than your impulses to make better decisions. Now, I want to cover the importance of shifting your mindset from valuing short-term temporary satisfaction to long-term fulfillment and goal attainment. We all know people who say they want to drop fat, build muscle, change their body composition, and improve their health. Yet often their daily actions conflict with their goals. So their actions aren't aligned with their ambitions, which is why they do not achieve the progress they desire. And we value our present self more than our future self. So often what ends up happening is we make decisions based off what is convenient or what we want in the moment without considering how that decision will impact us in the future, especially when it comes to food. And this is a concept referred to as delayed discounting, which means that we discount or devalue things that are going to happen to us in the future relative to the things that are happening to us right now, such as discounting our calorie budget and goal of losing body fat for the food craving we're experiencing in the moment. However, in every aspect of life, if you want to gain something, you need to be willing to give something up, which is why I always say that for every gimme, there's a gotcha. So this doesn't have to mean entirely giving up something forever, but you need to be willing to sacrifice some things in the present to succeed in the future. If you want to earn more money, you need to be willing to work more hours, serve more people, and/or increase and expand your skill set to be able to do more in order to earn more. If you want to be able to save more money in order to have greater financial security, you need to cut back on some of your frivolous expenses and live a more conservative lifestyle. If you want to be able to lose body fat and change your body composition, you need to eat less calorie-dense foods in order to get into a calorie deficit. And if you want to gain more muscle and increase your strength, you need to devote more time towards properly training and recovering adequately. And if you want to improve your health, you need to prioritize stress management, sleep quality, and cut back or give up on some of the types of activities that are harming your health, such as overeating and drinking alcohol in excess. If you're not willing to give up what you crave right now in order to achieve what you really want in life, you're never going to be able to fully reach your potential. So this is where shifting your mindset to thinking long term can be extremely important, as many allow their impulses to override their intellect, and this is what often derails their progress. So I encourage you that the next time you have a food craving, that instead of only thinking about how giving into that food craving will feel, like how good it'll feel in that moment, you consider how it will affect your goals you're working towards. As we often try to rationalize our decisions to ourselves by saying it'll only be one time, but cravings are never really just a one-time thing, as often once becomes twice, and often these habits and behaviors can spiral and kind of have a domino effect where they continue on forward. Strategy number five for defeating your cravings is to engage in episodic future thinking, which is a strategy that helps you stop giving up what you want most for what you want right now. So episodic future thinking is when you imagine a situation in the future and how the decision you will make right now will affect that situation in the future. So this strategy can help with making decisions around food. In order to do this, you want to think about your long-term goals and who you want to be. Who do you aspire to be? What type of person? Like, who do you want to identify with? What type of body composition? What type of executor and individual do you want to be? And think about what's most valuable to you. And before you make an impulsive decision to dive into that craving, think about what's more important. Is your long-term physique goals more important, or is that delicious package of cookies more important? And really ask yourself that and be objective about it. And this is a strategy that can be extremely helpful when you're out and you have a craving. And this is where you should use episodic future thinking to think about a healthier alternative. So if you're craving chocolate when you're out food shopping, for instance, try to flip the script and think about a healthier alternative that you can have once you get home from the grocery store. And think about an alternative that's more in line with your goals and more satiating. So that could be a chocolate protein shake made with frozen berries, the frozen strawberries, and the Ninja Creami. And this alternative will not only satiate and satisfy you for less calories, but it also puts you in a better position to meet your goals. And if you can imagine yourself choosing this option over the chocolate bar, it can help you realize that this is the more conducive decision. And research has found that episodic future thinking can help reduce eating decisions or impulsive eating decisions and calorie intake. So a 2013 study found that humans have the ability to engage in prospective imagery to anticipate the future consequences of present behaviors. But we often let our desire for immediate gratification in the moment lead us to devalue larger future consequences in favor of smaller, immediate rewards. So discounting large future rewards in favor of smaller, immediate rewards is known as delayed discount and increases with greater distance between the rewards. One approach to reduce delayed discounting is episodic future thinking. And episodic future thinking engages the episodic memory in prospectively experiencing future events and activates brain regions involved in prospective thinking. And so episodic future thinking during decision-making will actually reduce delay discounting. And so research also finds that the inability to delay gratification is related to obesity and the increase in weight over time. So delayed discounting predicts intake of energy-dense convenience foods in obese women, and poor impulse control predicts a lack of weight of success in weight loss. So this is where it's really beneficial to start thinking about the future over the present moment. And that will be really beneficial in helping you to stick to your diet and reach your goals. Now, strategy number six is to reduce the food cues around you. As one of the best ways to set yourself up for success is to manage and modify your food environment. So being exposed to food cues, such as the sight and smell of sweets and treats, is one of the leading triggers that can lead you to experiencing cravings and being more likely to overeat. So we want to remove the barriers and bottlenecks to your success. So first, modify the food you buy. One of the first steps to improving your nutrition for improving your body composition is to modify and improve the types of foods you purchase for your home. So stick to around the perimeter of the grocery store and aim to purchase mostly whole nutrient-dense food sources that provide a ton of nutrients without an excessive amount of calories. Next, keep food outside of your immediate environment. So the great thing about life is we have control of the foods we buy and eat. However, what types of foods and how much food we have in our immediate environment can also heavily influence our eating decisions, our food choices, our eating behaviors, our calorie intake, and ultimately our body composition progression or regression. And if you know you struggle with a specific food, I'd encourage you to not buy it or not to keep it in your house. And if for some reason or another, you can't keep that food out of your house in totality, just keep it out of your immediate environment, meaning near your workspace or out in the open staring at you. So you don't make the process of avoiding that food more difficult than it needs to be. And overall, with these strategies, we want to modify your food environment because when you're in closer proximity and have easier access to the things you crave, your likelihood to give into them increases even more. And by simply not keeping the trigger foods you crave in your house or even just in your immediate environment, you'll be less tempted by them. And we want to limit your exposure to food cues because one of the number one ways to decrease your likelihood to experience cravings is to limit the visual exposure you have to the foods that trigger you. And this is why you should avoid looking at things like food porn or watching advertisements for foods that you usually struggle with. So overall, if you change your eating environment, you can change your eating behaviors, and that can ultimately help you change and improve your body composition. To wrap this podcast up, I just want to go through some bonus strategies for controlling your cravings. First, manage hunger by eating a satiating diet. If you're extremely hungry and exposed to hyperpalatable foods, you're more likely to crave these foods and give into them. So aim to keep yourself satiated and to keep foods out of sight and out of mind. Another, strategy or tip is to stop thinking you need to be able to eat everything. Although it sounds great to say that we should be able to eat everything in moderation, honestly, that just doesn't work for everyone. So people focus far too much on just the calories a food contains and don't acknowledge the hedonic pull some of these foods have on them, which is where you need to determine whether you're a moderator or you're an abstainer. And for some of us who struggle with controlling our intake of certain foods, it's better to think of ways of replacing it just like we would a bad habit. Third, reduce your intake of trigger foods to extinguish your cravings for them. So if you can't fit a food into your calorie budget, then try to minimize your intake of it. The less you eat this food, the less you'll want it over time, as reinforcement value will go down and your memory of it will diminish over time, which will reduce your likelihood of experienced cravings and will also weaken the cravings you have for that specific food. Fourth, ensure you're hydrated, because many confuse poor hydration with hunger. So have at least 16 ounces of fluids and wait 15 to 30 minutes to eat to feel the satiety boosting benefits of this liquid preload. Fifth, do not skip meals or go long periods of time without fasting, as that can often exacerbate both hunger and the likelihood of experienced cravings. Six, get sufficient sleep. And seven, reduce your stress levels and work on your perception of stress so that this doesn't become a bottleneck to your ability to stick to the behaviors and habits that are going to lead you to physique progression. Now, here's the thing. I do realize that not everyone out there is going to be willing to take a food out of their diet that they're craving. And for some of you who have a high level of self-control and really good dietary habits, this may not be necessary. So for those of you who fall into this category, you may be able to incorporate some of the foods into your diet from time to time, but in order to reduce the likelihood of overeating the items that you crave, it's best to only eat these foods you crave once you're full. So a 1999 study tested the effects of hunger state on chocolate cravings in both chocolate cravers and non-cravers. And to test this, they took chocolate cravers and non-chocolate cravers and randomized them into two groups. So one group was the hunger group and one group was the full group. And so for those in the hunger group, they were instructed to eat chocolate only after going 2+ hours without eating. So they were already hungry. Whereas the full group were instructed to eat chocolates 15 to 30 minutes after eating a meal, where they were highly satiated. And they found that for both cravers and non-cravers who were in the hungry group, their chocolate cravings actually increased after eating the chocolate and throughout the time course of the trial. However, for those in the full group, their chocolate cravings decreased after eating the chocolate on those testing conditions and throughout the trial. And this study found that chocolate or cravings for chocolate or other foods may be an expression of a strong appetite elicited by hunger that has been acquired by repeated experience of eating the craved foods when hungry. And this can not only lead you to experiencing more food cravings for this food in general, but also lead you to eating more of it due to the hunger that's present when you consume it. So if you're going to reintroduce craved foods, make sure that you first keep yourself full, eat protein and veggies prior to eating a food you crave, and buy a single serving package to limit your intake and limit yourself from overeating, as these strategies will help improve your relationship with these foods and your eating behaviors around them. So overall, the most effective way to kill a craving is to reduce the frequency in which you consume the foods you crave most. And this is because it doesn't matter how much of a craving you give into, as cravings are more influenced by how frequently or how often you give into that craving and you eat those foods, as this reinforces the memory and experience of the craved foods in your brain and makes you want more, both in that individual meal where you're eating that food and also in the future. We also see that one of the key characteristics of successful weight loss and weight loss maintenance is that those who succeed within weight loss and weight loss maintenance don't give in to their cravings as often as those who do give in to their cravings. And this is because feeding a craving makes it stronger. And this is why we don't crave foods we've never tried or tasted, even if they're known for being delicious. So, for example, I had never had cinnamon before up until recently, and I had heard great things about it, but I had never tried it. And I had seen it at like the cinnamon spot in the mall. And despite it smelling great, it wasn't something I ever craved, despite the fact that I actually am a big fan of cinnamon. Well, my cousin decided to make a cinnamon cake a few years back for Christmas, and I tried just a small piece of it. And then for weeks after, I felt myself wanting it again. When if you had asked me just a few weeks prior to Christmas if I ever reported or ever experienced cravings for this, I would have told you no, because I had never had it. I knew that it smelled delicious, but I had no association with it. And so this is really how powerful certain foods can have on our cravings, but it is based on what we expose ourselves to and what we actually consume. And when you repeatedly expose yourself to eating hyperpalatable foods that cause a large dopamine release, you're setting your brain up to associate that food with pleasure and to ingrain that habit as something that feels good, which can cause you to develop eating habits and food cravings that won't serve your body composition and your health goals. So the more frequently you consume highly palatable foods, the more you'll crave them, which is why I believe that you should look to diet smarter, not just harder. And I do think, and this I kind of want to do a little offshoot about this, is because I often get questions regarding like, should someone try harder, whatever it may be. And I do think that there are many individuals out there who would benefit from trying harder when it comes to their physique goals, as many approach their goals with one foot in and one foot out. And this half-assed approach gets them nowhere. Generally, it just gets them spinning their wheels. However, as a coach, I'm not a believer in just telling my clients to try hard, because that's just not an effective approach, first and foremost. And there are a lot of people, we also have to consider the fact that there are a lot of people who are doing the wrong things, which is what's holding them back to begin with. So telling them to try harder and utilizing this approach is only going to have them trying harder on things that are only going to set them up for greater failure. I also feel like telling someone to try harder is similar to telling someone to eat less and exercise more, as although this statement is truthful, saying it isn't helpful if you don't give that person further guidance on what to do and how to do it. And this is where using some of the evidence-informed and experience-backed strategies I laid out in today's podcast can help you finally kill your cravings and stick to your diet easier so you can reach your goals in a more efficient, effective manner. So that does it for another episode of the Chasing Clarity Health and Fitness Podcast. Just so you guys know, my coaching roster is currently open. So if any of you are interested in one-on-one nutrition, training, and lifestyle coaching, please feel free to reach out to me through my email, which is bdecruzfitness@gmail.com. You guys can also find me on Instagram, which is @BrandonDecruz_. And please do remember to follow the show, whether that be on iTunes or Spotify, leave us a review, and share this episode on your stories so we can continue to reach more listeners and have a positive ripple effect on others, as my goal is to bridge the gap between research and information and practical application so that all of you out there can look better, feel better, and function better. And also, will be able to transform your lives in a manner where you're able to walk around with a better body composition and a mindset of abundance. So as always, guys, have yourselves a great weekend. I'll talk to you next week. Peace.